I'm Randy Hahn, and you're listening to another podcast from Teal Town, USA.
Good evening, Sharks fans. It is a Sunday night hockey extravaganza that took place in the beautiful land of Disneyland. The Sharks beat the Anaheim Ducks 4-3 in overtime. And they're coming home on a victorious note. And we welcome you to Teal Town After Dark, your live and interactive Sharks postgame show. By all means, do us a favor. If you haven't already, smash that subscribe button down below. Don't forget to ring that bell to make sure you know when we get on our on the air. You can also do multiple ways to interact with us, chat with us and fellow Sharks fans in the YouTube chat, on the page, or the app. You can also hashtag TealTownUSA on the Twitter machine. Might as well just follow us as well, at TealTownUSA. Better yet, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud, and of course the YouTube channel. I am joined tonight by the guy who spells his name the right way, Eric Landy.
Hey guys, how you guys doing?
And Mr. AJ Strong.
What's up?
What's up? You know what's up? The Sharks. That's what's up. Yeah. All right, let's get right into it. As the Sharks finished their coast-to-coast-to-coast road trip, three games that took them through Nashville, Carolina, and Anaheim, and that's where they were at tonight. As they started to get things going really early, as Logan Couture gets his sixth of the season at 234 from Brent Burns and Tomas Hertl. AJ, that line continues to be on fire.
Anybody who doesn't call this the top line, I don't know what they're smoking. This is the Sharks' top line. Even when Thornton comes back, this Couture, Meyer, Hertl is the Sharks' top line. There was even talk, too, about when Thornton comes back and we reconfigure the lines or something and then maybe moving Meyer up with Thornton. And it's like, why would you touch this line when it's this productive? It has to be going for half the goals. That the Sharks have right now.
Gotcha. Landy, what did you think? We were getting...
We seem to be having audio issues.
Yeah. We're having cracking, and the AJ is low and cracking. Thank you. and apparently our notes get on the screen, too. Landy, while we work on this stuff... Landy, what did you take from the opening goal and how Meyer, Hertl, Couture just seem to be going awesome?
Yeah, I mean, right now I believe that Timo Meyer and Tomas Hertl are the best forwards on the Sharks at the moment. I can pretty much say that without any kind of reservation or hesitation. Both of those guys have really stepped up and have shown why they were drafted in the areas they were drafted. You know, Timo Meyer got a lot of flack because he was, you know, picked over a bunch of other players, Matt Barzal in particular, who everybody likes to bring up. But you're just seeing now what the Sharks scouts saw in him. He's able to play that really quick up-tempo game that the Sharks have targeted as their game plan, but he's also a bull on skates. So he can't be pushed off the puck and, you know, really is able to hold control and possession of the puck deep in the zone, enough time for his forwards to kind of fan out in that umbrella and just get the shots on goal. With respect to Tomas, I mean, I feel like this is the next step we thought he could make. You know, after that four-goal game, it was, you know, but in his rookie season, it was the sky is the limit for this kid. But unfortunately, you know, a couple of knee injuries later and, you know, some lackluster play in between trying to figure the NHL out, you know, it looked like, okay, well, maybe he's not that number one center, number one winger that we thought he might be. But guys, I'm telling you what, this is his second, third full season. You know, coming into it as going to be fully healthy, could really focus in the off season on strength training and conditioning. And you're seeing it. I mean, he has really evolved into, that kind of monster forward that he thought we could be. And I pegged it early on in the preseason, or actually, heck, even in the summer, I said, don't be surprised if we see a 60 to 75 point player out of Tomas Hertl. And this is why I thought he might be able to make that jump this year.
Yeah, no, definitely. They all have made that big jump this year so far. I mean, granted, 11 games in, you're starting to see the trends now growing. And they definitely have played very well and played very well together, for that matter. Unfortunately for the Sharks, just a minute 42 seconds later, Josh Manson gets off a shot that beats Martin Jones, gets off and Henrique with the assist. This game is tied 1-1, 4:16 in. And for that matter, the Sharks dominated this period 19-8, AJ. And outside that one blemish, I thought San Jose played pretty well going after 20 minutes.
Well, they had to play a lot better after what we saw in Carolina. Am I right, boys?
Very true.
Those last 40 minutes were putrid. So nice bounce back tonight. You knew that the Ducks were coming into this really pissed off because they're on a 4-game losing streak coming into this. So, I mean, now essentially 5. So, I mean, it's nice to see the Sharks just having a good kind of bounce back, a wake-up call after what they had in Carolina. And nice to get some retribution for the home opener versus Anaheim. And again, the guys are getting shots from crashing the net. So there you go.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think, AJ, that you bring up some really good points. However, I have a little bit of a different take, though, on that first period. I thought that the Sharks outplayed them in every facet, but because of lackluster goaltending, they let Anaheim creep in. And I kind of felt like that's kind of been the story. That was the story overall of this game. A couple of defensive miscues and some lackluster reads on the puck by Jones. And the Sharks nearly coughed this one away. And it's a little disturbing, really. And you're looking right now, Jones' stat line, 27 to 30, a .900 save percentage. I mean, that's okay, but boy, to me, there's still something not right about his positioning. I don't know if it's still he's working on something or something's ailing him, but I don't know. There's just something I can't put my finger on, and he doesn't look right.
Something seems not right with him, but he's still getting the job done. So I'm guessing it's the world's okayest goalie, or has he got a fight dealt with that with the copyrights to that one?
Well, I mean, it's funny you bring that up, but right now I think Dell is the more, I think he's the stronger of the two as far as just his play goes mechanically. I don't know about you, AJ, but I just feel like Dell's mechanics right now are just a little bit more, they're a little bit more calmer than Jones. And Jones has made some uncharacteristic, Niemi-like movements out there.
Jones, I don't think he's been the guy that we kind of expected. One of the goals tonight, I do think, out of the three that Anaheim scored, two I think were solid goals. There was one goal. Nobody was going to stop that Aberg goal. That was just ridiculous. I should say the first Aberg goal. But the first goal that Anaheim scored, that one I kind of looked at and I went,
Manson.
Yeah. So I kind of go,
the first and the third goals were really the ones that I had the problem with. That second one, you're absolutely right. Aberg was not going to be denied.
No.
But that third period goal.
I do agree that Dell looks more comfortable than the three games that we've seen him play so far. And who knows? I mean, the Sharks now get off this three-game road stand. They've, played like three home games in the month of October with one more coming up versus the Rangers. So it's only four home games this month. And then you got, November, there's a lot of games at home. You know, they got a four-game stand, then leave for two, then play another six. So, 10 out of their next 12 are at home. So that, I think, hopefully being at home, let them work out some stuff. And hopefully, it's kind of that one thing where the power play was putrid and they figured that out far. They figured that out. And, some of the 5-on-5 scoring, but they figured out, okay, you know what? Things happen much better when we crash the net. So now it's kind of like, all right, now let's tackle the Jones situation. Like, let's just take our issues one at a time. And so this is the next one they have to look at.
And it'll be nice for them to get some home cooking. I mean, let's be real here. Like you said, three of the first 11 at home, that's a little rough there. Going to the second period, a great moment. And Shark Stats, if you are watching, we hope you are. Hi, by the way. This has got to be a first, I think. If not, it's got to be a rarity in Sharks history where two rookies score their first NHL goals in back-to-back games. And tonight, that was Saskatchewan native Rourke Chartier with his first goal, assisted by Hurdle and Meyer. 2:13. Landy, he gets his first goal of the year just by being right in front of the net at the right time.
Yeah, look, I mean, Rourke Chartier came up with Arizona, and was just a prolific goal scorer for the Rockets. That he was kind of a little bit of a late bloomer because he really bloomed after his draft, by the Sharks, and he went back to Kelowna for one more season and really lit it up. We were a little concerned about his wear and tear because of the concussion history and concussion issues. With that seemingly in the past, it's really good to see him come up to the show and really, put on some really good work in that fourth line, really solidifying that center spot since Thornton went out. And, Chartier was the replacement body, so to speak, for Thornton, and playing really well. He's a puck possession kind of driver on that line. He's a really good complement to Goodrow and to Carlson, and really just a little motor on that fourth line, and well deserved. It had been a long time coming, for sure. It was almost like Suomela. You just kept waiting and waiting before he was going to get that first goal. But you know what? He finally got it, and it was on a great kind of crash the net kind of play. So really happy to see him do well. And really, I think overall I'm just really happy that he made it here, because his career looked like it was in doubt for a little bit.
Okay, so it's official. Machado just struck out and Boston has won the World Series. And how great is it? Because if it can't be Puig getting the final out, it should be Machado based on the douchebaggery that he has done over this, these playoffs.
Postseason.
So, there you go. Good for you, Boston, just because it's not good for you, it's Boston. It's, because FLA. And now we return.
We're not talking to Florida.
And now we return back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Yes. We now rejoin the recap of the second period already in progress.
I look forward to seeing Kershaw playing for the Giants next season.
No.
Oh, hey, maybe Bumgarner can teach him a thing or two about throwing in the postseason.
Yeah.
All right. So we welcome all of those baseball viewers to Teal Town After Dark. So in case you were watching Boston beating the Dodgers, the Sharks won in overtime, 4-3 in overtime. And a big part of that was Timo Meier. He gets his seventh goal of the season at 4:10 of the second period from Couture and Carlson with a wicked one-timer, as we're saluting Boston, I guess, with a wicked one-timer. But AJ, Timo, time, all the time, especially in Anaheim.
No, I mean, yeah, you'd be remiss not to talk about Meyer. I mean, the kid came, a half a skate blade off the ice from having, potting a hat trick tonight. But for me, no, the other thing was Erik Karlsson getting that assist. Karlsson, if this wasn't his best game, I don't know which one was, but this was Karlsson. Again, it's one of those things where we had different issues that we need to try to work out. And Karlsson was one of those, and that also seems to be coming along as well.
I mean, look, for a team that's not hitting on all cylinders, I mean, the fact that they're able to win these games the way that they are and pretty much score at will and outpossess the puck and outshoot, you know, all but one of their opponents, that's pretty good. I mean, this team will be, I mean, very, very scary when it fires on all cylinders.
Yeah.
I mean, and if we're thinking this team is kind of swimming at like 70% efficiency, so to speak, of how much their offensive output is, and I would say even less on the defensive side of the puck because they still look like they're kind of all over the place. When they're firing all cylinders, 80-90% efficiency on their scoring on the offensive side of the puck and able to keep a little bit more out of the net. Ouch. The league will have to worry about this team.
Yeah. I mean, I also like seeing Vlasic back with Braun. I think that's working out. But let's go ahead and finish off the second period.
Yeah, the Pointus Aberg makes a point to tell everyone that the Ducks are back in this game after that offsides challenge that negated Meyer's second goal of the game in the second period. He gets the Ducks within one at 3-2, gets a little scary again, and AJ, I'll say this, I was having shades of the Carolina game as the Sharks kind of pulled off the pedal there a little bit.
Yep. I felt the exact same way. It was that challenge on Meyer's goal. Like, it flipped things for a little while, totally in Anaheim's favor, kind of gave them a little bit of energy for quite the rest of the second period. And then you saw that sick goal from Aberg, which was just ridiculous. And I'm sorry. The second Aberg one was the filthy one. The first Aberg one, that's the one that I, with Jones,
yeah.
I think that's the one where I kind of look at it and go, you know, Jonesy, if you're hugging the post, and there's been a few that have snuck in on him because he doesn't get up tight enough on that post. I don't know if it's because he's trying to cheat over or what, but that's the one. If there's three... The three goals that were let in, if there's one that I kind of look at Jones and I go, you know, that's a positioning thing, that's the one that I kind of say, yeah, you should have had that one back.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what I'm talking about with the confidence and the mechanics-wise. He's not keeping his shoulders up. And we've seen it routinely, when he's in goal, he'll give up one stinker a game because he's got his mechanics all out of whack. You know, he's not keeping his shoulders up. He's not being square to the shooter. He's not making good reads when it's a two-on-one and he's either got to, play the pass or play the shot. And he's just not making good reads right now. And I think that the team honestly plays a little bit differently in front of him. I feel like they are a little less aggressive with the up passes because I feel like they're afraid it'll come back into their own zone and they'll have to come kind of bail Jones out. And, you know, like the difference between tonight's game and the Carolina game where I just thought, you know, that team and the Sharks both were kind of flying up and down the ice. Tonight it was just a little bit more methodical and a little less like automatic to me. And honestly, to me, it does seem like they play a little differently when Jones is in the net.
Yeah, and we'll just cut right to the third period since both of you guys mentioned it already. But Pontus Aberg with a filthy shot, and you know, AJ, I mean, again, I mentioned the shades of Carolina, but my goodness, Anaheim came on strong there as they outshot the Sharks in the third, 13-10, to really put the pressure on the Sharks late there.
Absolutely. Just like what you said earlier, the whole thing with Carolina, you know, I'm like, oh God, here we go again. This is, you know, but credit the guys, because they did seem to calm down a little bit more as that was going on. Although there was, you know, there was some a little shenaniganery, to quote the one Rocket backhander. There was, you know, you saw what happened with Sorensen. Kane and Getzlaf clearly having some issue there. There was definitely, so I'm surprised that we didn't see nobody getting five for fighting in this. I'm really surprised that it stayed as mellow as it did, Landy.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I feel like somebody should have taken a little bit of retribution on Manson, because that guy laid out Chartier into the boards, and that looked really, really dangerous. You know, Chartier had his head down a little bit, but it was that follow through with the glove at the end that was just—it was dirty. It was not good, and I was a little worried for Rourke because he went right to the bench, and I was like, oh no, you know, that's just all he needs right now. Exactly. And then Manson comes back on that same shift as soon as Rourke is kind of exiting, you know, exiting the ice surface. Manson goes and does it to Sorensen.
Yeah, completely. But like Felix said tonight, it was a lot less chippy than I thought it would be. Yeah, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. I think especially how the Sharks got out to that huge start early on. I thought that they dominated in everything. Yeah, one timer even mentioned in the third period, Kessler got a puck to the face, but he came out there no time. Yeah, that third period, the goalies tend to shut it down, and then in overtime, it leads to crashing the net, and probably the biggest gaffe that John Gibson's probably done all season tonight was to make a save. He threw out the puck with his glove, hoping that, you know, one of his Ducks teammates would pick it up. Goes right to Meyer. He slams it back in. The Sharks win in overtime, 4-3. Timo Meyer's second goal of the game. AJ and, you know, tenacity for the boys.
Absolutely. And again, finally getting one in overtime. I keep going back to that Carolina game. So nice to see them prove that, okay, yeah, they can pull it off in overtime. You know, the last thing I wanted to see was for Dakota win a shootout, but especially versus John Gibson. I mean, let's be honest. This game could have been 6-2 Sharks if not for Gibson. I mean, you play that same game against, you know, I don't know, Vancouver or something like that. And it's or if they, you know, say they play that same game against Peter Budaj in LA. Just
right.
Yeah. No. And the guys on the broadcast brought it up. I mean, Gibson is literally the only reason why Anaheim is staying anywhere near their position in the standings, because honestly, that team, first off, it looks slow. I mean, and I know that going into the season, there was this big hullabaloo that, you know, oh, we're going to play differently. Randy is going to teach the guys how to play fast. And, you know, all this rigmarole that you know, Bob Murray was putting out there because his team got flat embarrassed in the playoffs. But look, they're still the same plotting team. And quite frankly, their defense core looks a little worse. And, you know, it's an aged team. Ryan Kessler's barely being held together with duct tape and super glue. Ryan Getzlaff's, you know, long in the tooth. Corey Perry's missing a knee. You know, so really, I mean, they're really heavily focusing on Richie and Jakob and their young kids. Yeah, Raquel.
Silverberg.
But they're
Kotcha when he ever comes back.
Right. And so, you know, that set of talent versus the talent of Perry and Getzlaff in their primes is different. It's different, and I think it's worse. So that team is going to have to figure out how to do more with less, so to speak, and Gibson is literally the only thing keeping them afloat. Yeah, really.
There's no way they have 11 points without Gibson. And Felix asking in the chat, you think Randy Carlisle's on the hot seat? Of course he is. Because, you know, a certain part of it is like, yeah, okay, he's on the hot seat, but then he can turn around and he can point to the man games lost because of injury and say, well, those aren't my fault. So, but either way.
I mean, honestly, though, Randy Carlisle's hiring was a stopgap. I mean, he should have never been rehired. The guy does not know how to adapt to the new NHL. His teams have always had that lumbering, pugnacity I can't even remember the name. The GM from Vancouver and Toronto, Berkey. You know, the pugnacity and the truculence. You know, that's Randy Carlisle's calling card. But look, that L.A., you know, your team just down the 405 is staring down the specter of the game passing them up the same way. And if the guys in Anaheim don't look at L.A. and go, wow, we really need to change the way that we move and, you know, we play the game, they're going to get the game passed up by them.
Whose seat is hotter right now, Carlisle's or Todd McClellan's?
Oh, well, McClellan, I mean, look, the Oilers have stormed all the way back tonight before the Sharks won. So I think Todd McClellan's eased some of the early fears of the team. But, you know, that team and that market is expecting big things. And if they don't make it at least to the second round, I think Todd's going to get the boot. Carlisle, I think, is out. I mean, this is his last year on his contract. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't re-up him. I honestly think that team needs another direction and it needs a new face behind the bench.
I just wonder if they do it sooner than later, as in if things start to spiral in Anaheim, can him mid-season or wait until the season's over? But it remains.
I think the guy though that really is the one that's on the hot seat is John Stevens. I know I've been hearing a lot that Rob Blake is not happy with the way that Stevens is coaching that LA team. And that's a team that has a lot of aspirations, and I don't know if they're necessarily warranted aspirations, but you know, I think John Stevens is actually the guy that's got the hottest seat so far.
Well,
and yo,
see, but you look at that. Yeah. But I mean, just kind of focusing on the Pacific, the thing is Anaheim and LA both got swept last playoffs. They both play a slower, heavy physical game where obviously the game is much speedier now. They haven't adapted and they largely did not make any large, you know, there weren't huge changes in the off season. Now for the Sharks, you could say, well, I mean, they didn't make a whole lot of changes. They, you know, they only went out and got arguably the best defenseman in the league, who is leading the team with the -7, you know, but, you know, which is just a fun stat to throw out there to support a ridiculous argument. But with LA and Anaheim, those teams are just still trying to play that, just that plotting, just thumper type of a game. And I mean, Anaheim, there wasn't really any significant change in the offseason. It's like they kind of thought, no, we think we can get along with these guys, whether it's going to be, you know, Raquel and Richie, and we still think we can get, you know, one final year out of Perry and Getzloff and of course, Gibson and everything. And then L.A., okay, they brought in Kovalchuk. Well, what's happened with that since? Like, L.A. is just, like, bottomed out. Like, the right. First week, there was like, oh, okay, this might be okay. And then since then, just, boom.
Right. I mean, you look at Anaheim's differential right now. They're a minus four. You know, they've let in 34 goals, and that's with John Gibson standing on his head.
Well, and look, don't they allow the most shots on goal and have the lowest amount of shots taken? So
yeah. Yeah, they're like, negative in the Corsi department. But, But, I mean, L.A., I mean, look, minus 17. They've let in 39 goals already, and their scoring has always had issues, and they've only, you know, gotten 22 goals. I mean, you know, L.A. is in some real dire straits right now. And I bring up
saying, right?
Yeah, Quick's out. Dustin Brown got a goal tonight. I think this was his first game back or second game back. But still, I mean, that team, you know, that team's their defensive core is not great. But I bring up St. Louis because, look, they're a team that's got high aspirations. And, you know, they've got 9 points. They're 3-4-3.
A lot of people picking them at the beginning of the season to be that team that comes in behind Nashville and Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, look, now Vegas is waking up a little bit. You know, they're starting to claw back. I mean, I wouldn't sleep on Dallas either, Calgary, but you know, these teams, I mean, the other big surprise that if their staying power continues, will knock out LA or Anaheim for a wild card position, at least, is Chicago. If Chicago continues to play the way that they are and is able to kind of fight for a wild card position, guys, I would not be surprised if we see another season where two wild cards come from the Central again.
Oh, boy. We might have to make a bet on that one.
Because, I mean, honestly, I think Vancouver kind of emerged. I think that they're going to kind of shift back to reality here soon. Their differential's a minus nine. You know, I think Anaheim is going to have the same problems, you know, now as they will in the future. LA, I think they've dug themselves too big of a hole. So, you know, the teams that I'm looking at right now is Vegas, Calgary, Edmonton, and San Jose for, you know, three teams or three spots for four teams. That's where I'm kind of handicapping it right now. And, you know, we're only 11 games, 12 games into the season, but that's kind of how this is kind of morphing into right now.
Yeah. Well,
completely agree. A lot of people in the chat saying who they think is on the hot seat. Rob, I've been saying Kings need to tear it down to the Bolts. Sleepy Mofo saying I think Boogie's job is on the line in Florida. Yeah,
that's a disappointment, for sure.
Sleepy Mofo was saying Ducks were still in second. Carlisle's job is safe for now, but actually it's Edmonton. So to which he says, T-Mac's job is safe for now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And it's tight in the standings. We'll get to that in just a second. But let's finish this off with the stats on the night. The Sharks outshot the Ducks 49-30. Faceoffs, the Ducks at one time were dominating 63-37. The Sharks came back, get that. But the Ducks still had the advantage 55-45. Both teams were 0-for on the power play. Sharks 0-for-2. Ducks 0-for-1. In the hits department, Ducks took it on 27-16. Blocks, Ducks dominated 16-10. Giveaways 11-8 in favor of Quackenheim. Timo Meier had a 3-point night with 2 goals and assists. He was your first star in the evening in Anaheim. Pontus Aberg with 2 goals. He had that sick dangle that made it look pretty. He was the second star. Ryan Getzlaff for 2 assists night was the third star on the evening. Martin Jones, 27 saves on 30 shots, while John Gibson stopped 45 of 49 on their hurdle. 2 assists with a plus 3. Meyer was a plus 4 on the night. out there for all four Sharks goals on the evening.
I mean, and let's talk about that real quick. I mean, picking Getzlaf over Hurdle? I mean, really? You talk about a home team scorecard.
Yeah, but
you know, I mean,
Aaron Dell could have very easily been the third star in Carolina. I mean, it is what it is. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought Hurdle was really noticeable on the ice. I felt like Getzlaf, you know, had some real big brain farts in a couple of those sequences. So I don't know. I felt like Hurdle played a more complete game than Getzlaf.
Two assists.
Did.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. But again, it's the home cooking, and I'm sure it's kind of like, well, this is probably Getzlaf's last year. Let's give him what little he has left. but
the guy's lost all of his hair.
I do want to touch on again other things that the Sharks need to work on, and that's something that they can do when they play, you know, 10 of their next 14 here, is the faceoff circle, because they got completely owned. Like, it was getting worse and worse and worse in Carolina. And it started to get a little bit better towards the end of this Anaheim game, but through those first two periods, it was bad. It was like 60-40 or something, or 62-38. It was not good. And before I throw it back to Puck Guy, Kevin LeBanc, you're on the clock. This is your wake-up call.
Yeah, he got sent down from the top line, down further down the depth chart. And the Milkman made his return to the top line tonight with Kane and Pavelski.
Yeah, I mean, look, his game right now is ailing. You know, he is just being way too soft on some of these pucks where he's not able to hold possession, and it's leading to key turnovers that are leading to goals. He's not making good decisions with the puck, not making safe decisions with the puck. I understand that he feels he needs to play this playmaking style, and it's going to be kind of, Kevin LeBanc giveth, Kevin LeBanc taketh away. But still, I mean, this is a kid that is on the younger side, needs to understand that he needs to make safer plays. He needs to make sure that his own end is buttoned up and defensively sound before he can go out and make that pretty pass. Because the kid's got the vision. There is no doubt. He has got the talent. It's just sometimes the decision-making is not where his hands, you know, and his body is yet. And it'll come. It'll come. I think he needs to really work on the upper body strength, because he's getting pushed off of a lot of pucks. But he's got the tools for sure.
Yeah. A couple things in the chat before we move on. Asking, when will we see Carlson on the score sheet? Well, Carlson was on the score sheet tonight. Got an assist on Meyer's first goal. So I think you're going to see more and more of that as the season. You know, he's still finding his rhythm, but the last two games have been his best. So it's trending in the right direction. Carolina is a top team in the faceoff stat. No, I get that. They also were the first team to shoot more than San Jose. I just look at that, though, that game, that Carolina game, to me, that was an anomaly. That 99 times out of 100, the Sharks don't lose that game. That was them just, I don't know what happened in those final 40 minutes. The fact that they got a charity point out of that speaks volumes. But I digress.
But 5 out of 6 points on the road trip,
yeah,
we'll take it. And against you know, the President's Trophy winners last year, a team that's been playing pretty well in the Southeast. Wow, that's a long time ago.
Atlantic.
The Metropolitan. And a team that dominated them and ruined their home opener earlier in the month. We'll take it. 5 points out of 6.
All right.
Yeah. Really, they went through the early season litmus test, and I give them a solid B+ to me. I did not like the Carolina kind of letting them back in, because they could have definitely had 2 points or had an extra point there. But the full marks on the comeback for the Predators, and they got the 2 points tonight. Didn't like the way that they got there, but they still got it. So again, I'd say a B+ for me.
All right. We had completely talked over that transition. That was cool.
Try it again.
All right, one more time. Here we go. All right.
All right. And let's talk about the San Jose Barracuda. They were in Texas last night. Well, for a second night in a row, technically, as they took on the Texas Stars at the Dr. Pepper Arena, I think is what it's called. They won 6-1. Funny enough, Michael Mersch for the Texas Stars got that game going a minute 17 in, made it 1-0 Texas, and after that, it was all Barracuda. Helga Watts, Keaton Middleton, Manny Widower, Jeremy Waugh with his first on the season, Nick DeSimone with his second, and Maxim Latunov gets his fifth, with Antoine Bebo only needing to stop 20 of 21 shots as the Cuda go crazy and put up a six-pack on the Texas Stars, 6-1.
Nice to see Jeremy Waugh finally break through. I'm waiting on that kid.
Yeah, I mean, and almost looking like, you know, he might be one of those players like Chartier that could have, you know, fallen through with a lot of injury derailments. But you know what? It's really good to see that his game has progressed and honestly taken a large step this year. I wouldn't even say like it's kind of incremental. I think that this is a really, really good sign for his development.
All right. And
I'm sorry, what was that?
And now I think it's time.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
Have the goddamn common courtesy to give him a reach around.
Have the courtesy, for Pete's sakes.
It's the wraparound.
Agreed to disagree.
No, I both of you know it's the wraparound. Let's get into it, shall we? There were a number of games in the NHL this evening. The LA Kings kicked off a crazy sports day in Los Angeles. I don't know if you heard about this, but it was the first time that all four major pro sports were in play today. But the Kings win 4-3 over the New York Rangers. Alec Martinez getting the game-winning goal. As Lady mentioned before, Dustin Brown got his first goal of the season on the power play. As the Rangers go down to the Kings, both teams have identical 3-7-1 records.
You've actually missed a couple. So you're talking Rangers versus Kings, Packers versus Rams, Wizards versus Clippers, Boston versus LA for the World Series. But there's two more games you could tack on to that.
And that would be?
Sharks versus Anaheim.
Right.
And the Dynamo versus the Galaxy.
Oh, that was an L. Jeez.
So, yeah.
Craziness.
The sports equinox happening in Southern California today.
Yikes. That's insane.
Yeah. It's like, what, traffic isn't bad enough already?
Right. Right. There, especially in those venues.
They're prepping for the Olympics in like a decade. In Detroit, the Wings win their second game of the season, beating the Dallas Stars 4-2. Smith and Fosca get the goals for Dallas, as Anthony Mantha, Rocket's least favorite Red Wing, Tyler Bertuzzi, Erickson and Abdelkader get on the board for the Red Wings as they score 3 in the third to beat them. Beat the Stars 4-2 with Jonathan Bernier getting the win for the Red Wings. In Carolina, the Islanders take care of the Hurricanes 2-1 with Ryan Pulock getting the game winner 14:35 into the second period. Thomas Greiss with the victory, former Shark Alert, as Teuvo Teravainen gets his third of the year, his second consecutive, I believe, on there.
I believe that was so, Greiss's 100th victory.
Oh, congrats to you, Mr. Greiss. In Chicago, it was Connor McDavid once again. He gets the game-winning overtime winner as the Oilers had at that time temporarily were in first place with a 2-1 win over the Chicago Blackhawks. Zach Cassian getting his first on the year. Brent Seabrook getting the lone goal as Cam Ward did not do this pitch. 2-1 final in overtime. The Blackhawks go to 15 points. The Oilers at 13. In Vegas, in overtime, the Senators lose 4-3 in overtime to the Vegas Golden Knights. Jonathan Marchessault getting the game-winning goal on a penalty shot in overtime for his sixth of the season. Tuck Reeves and Tuck again for the Knights. Matt Duchene getting his fourth on the season. Bobby Ryan, remember him? He was supposed to be a part of the Erik Karlsson trade. Gets his second of the season. Zingle, his fourth.
I haven't remembered Bobby Ryan since Anaheim.
I don't think Bobby Ryan has remembered Bobby Ryan since Anaheim.
Ouch! And that gives you all the scores right there. Sharks in first place at 14 points. Edmonton 13 with a game in hand on San Jose. Vancouver at 12, tied with Anaheim. They have the tiebreaker with the wins. So, with that, we look forward to the New York Rangers coming to town on Tuesday night. It is the special promo Los Tiburones shirt. So, if you want to get that, check out sjsharks.com for that one.
And you talk about a team coming in to the barn in San Jose in a foul mood. 3 wins so far. New York is just, this would be the perfect time for Hurdle to put King Henry out of commission as well. Just saying.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And at this rate, he probably will.
Or it could be the Timo Meier going through between legs and to send Lundqvist into Night Nightville.
Well, remember, Burns and Timo both on 8-game point streaks right now. Couture and Hurdle right behind them with 6 games. So it's going to be fun to see how long they can keep this up.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Hurdle, Couture, and Meier line are just will not be stopped. You know, that line is just totally clicking. And it's good to see. You know, it's a nice configuration of a two-way forward with two power forwards on his wings, and it's nice to see those two be the you know, possession monsters and from the point or fire off from the circles and, you know, let the other two go to work. So, no kidding. They're the top line right now.
And 4 games coming up at the tank. The Rangers, that should be simple. Columbus, Philly, and Minnesota, I don't know that any of those teams, I think once the Sharks get into a rhythm, I don't know that any of those teams really scare me. But I think, again, use the next 2 weeks, get back into that rhythm of Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Because it's been weird, you know, like 3 Sunday, or not 3 in a row, but I mean 2 Sunday games, a weird Friday game in here. I mean, Jesus Christ, you're playing it Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific a few weeks ago for Columbus Day. So let's get back into the regular schedule of things. And I can't wait to see where this team is going to be come Thanksgiving. That's what I look forward to. So,
And that's always the point where you kind of throw away the small sample size and actually see the trends going there for sure. But yeah, you're right. They haven't been on a regular schedule of sorts. So it'll be nice for them to get back into it and get some home cooking too. And like you said, 10 out of the next 14 at home, with the exception of a couple of road games here and there, including like Dallas and St. Louis.
Bizarrely enough, back-to-back on the road.
Go figure, right? Yeah. Jeez. But with that brings into a close. Really quick, Sleeping with Panarin is waiting for a trade deadline. Is he coasting? Didn't look like it. I think he scored a couple of goals the other day. So, Cowboys, is there such thing as a regular NHL schedule? No, especially not during a World Cup or Olympics. So, with that, we'll put a close to this edition. Mr. Landy, who spells his name the right way, of course, your final thoughts on where the people can find you?
Final thoughts is I hope that we continue to see the maturation of Erik Karlsson on the blue line and get him a regular D partner.
I don't like the idea of them swapping out so much. And, you know, I'd like to see them just kind of hunker down on their set pairs. But that's kind of the way that it is right now. It's a nice problem to have. Where you can find me, using my first name, Eric, and my last name, Landy, on all of the social media garbage. And I don't make any qualms about how to find me because I just use my first and my last name.
And that's with E-R-I-K. For sure. He spells it like Carlson. And so with that, Mr. Strong, where can the people find you and your final thoughts on this evening?
Talk to the hand. Talk to the hand. If you're going to keep doing this, talk to the hand. So tired of that. My final thoughts, besides talk to the hand, just continue to knock out your problems. Like we talked about at the beginning, power play was an issue. We fixed that. Now let's look off at faceoffs. Let's look at getting Jones settled in. Let's look at unlocking Erik Karlsson. Again, he's trending upward. So let's just continue this, knock out the problem areas, and again, let's see where we're at come Thanksgiving. Should be good. AJ_Strong on Twitter, on Instagram, also doing some gramming for @TealTownUSA, and trying to figure out why OBS is the bane of my life. But other than that, there we go. See you after New York.
We fought our way through this, and we've done pretty good, I think, tonight. In case you missed anything or you want to watch this again, check us out on TealTownUSA.com or your favorite podcatcher, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. We are there. We appreciate where you find us anyway, but especially make sure you hit that subscribe button and that bell next to it to get notified when we come back on. So we appreciate all those. I love it. California Creepers, my final thought, ducks suck. God, they do.
They do. Cannot disagree with this statement.
Yes. Well, you know what what doesn't suck for the ducks?
Those John Gibson
jerseys.
Oh, I am John Gibson.
And John Gibson. Yeah, good point, Landy. Good point. My final thought is it's going to be so nice to see them wearing teal and black jerseys again. Oh, my goodness. So it should be interesting.
It's going to be so great to see them wearing teal. Well, I was going to say, teal and black. I was going to say, it'd be so great to see them wearing teal jerseys again against the Rangers. And then two consecutive nights of black. Stealth mode back. Yeah.
Right. That's when we go full on stealth mode. But definitely some home cooking is what this team needs. It helped them the first time to get the power play going. Can it help them get the faceoffs and more chemistry going? Yes. Absolutely. It'll be fun to see. And hey, maybe we get Jumbo back.
Based on the news that came out today on Twitter, I don't think it's coming anytime soon, man. I would not be surprised. And in fact, if I'm putting money down on it, I do not think we see Jumbo back before Thanksgiving.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Nope. Gonna have to get used to, you know, a Thornton-less Sharks team at some point,
right?
Nope.
All right. With that, thank you for watching. We will be back with you on Tuesday night following the Sharks and Rangers. If you're at the game, by all means, I'll be there. Come and say hi. I don't bite, right, AJ?
Can neither confirm nor deny.
Oh wow.
I would have said he doesn't bite hard, but
wait, hey,
that's, Randy, that's, shut up. That's Sharky that does that.
Yeah, that's Sharky. That's right. And the mascot Sharky, along with my dog. So with that, keep it real, keep it teal, keep it real teal. We'll see you Tuesday night after the Sharks disrespect the Rangers. Good night, everyone.